right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789 in Texas. That same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I was saying to you off the air about these... Our NATO allies can't continue. They can't afford to continue to send these weapons. And even if you added all of their weapons up, their weaponry up that they're sending, you know, they clearly don't come close to what we're sending. And you stated so aptly, man, and we don't even think about it, that $800 million military budget
is... Billion
is going to soon, next time around, it'll be a trillion. And we can say, well, listen, we depleted all our weapons. We need to have all of these arms that we would use ourselves.
Well, and we have to stiffen our ability to fight a war with China.
Yeah, ourselves, right.
And we have to be able to stiffen our ability to have a war with Russia. And so, there's no question that they're setting, the table has been set for $1 trillion a year defense budget based on the circumstance that's being created out of all this. And that's a huge domestic detriment, huge.
Well, the GDP is not growing to that degree, so they're going to take it from somewhere else, as you stated.
Yeah, particularly if we slip into a stagflated recession. Recession means the GDP is actually falling. So it's not growing, so that would become an increasing percentage of a decreasing number. And with the deglobalization of the world economy, that also will have a long-term recessionary effect, not a growth opportunity, but a recessionary effect. So if the outcome of the Ukraine hostility is to recompartmentalize the world, to deglobalize it, the deglobalized economy will have a lower growth rate than a globalized economy. That's one of the clear historical facts of globalization, is the world economy grew at a faster rate than it ever had, and a big driver of that was China. Well, are we going to try and decompartmentalize from China? Because we talk like that, that will be exceedingly difficult.
Let me ask you, Sandy, this is a horrible time and difficult time it would have been for any president. All these different things happening, I don't care who the president was, some of the former presidents, this would be a difficult time for any of them with all the different confluences of things that are happening. Joe Biden, how much more of this can the poor guy take?
Yeah,
well, I mean, we have to really, Sandy. We look at him and he's fragile. Anybody who looks at him knows he's fragile, and so it's one thing after another, after another, after another. And I was watching him last night as he was talking about, you know, what we have to do with guns. He really is a sensitive guy. I mean, when you look at the tragedies in his own life and what he's had to deal with his son, with his first wife and children dying in the automobile. I mean, he's gone through an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
And here he is having to try to hold all of this up at the time that he's being attacked and assaulted. He hasn't been the president for a full 2 years yet. How much more can he take?
Well, and the thing is, what we really need is a strong leadership and someone who can maybe shift the direction of the United States in more positive ways. He might have those instincts, but the question is, does he have the charisma and the capacity of leadership?
Not now.
And who is on the horizon who does? And, you know, because... You know what? We keep talking about America and the problems it's got, and I wouldn't deny the fact that I do believe we have many, many problems, and we have some real societal problems. And the only way to get out of it is to shift course. You know, this aircraft carrier of a country needs to have its direction changed, and that will require very strong leadership. And not the kind of leadership that, or strong leadership that Donald Trump provided, because that was not going to change the direction of the aircraft carrier in any positive way. So, you know, I just think that we need America, because we need to understand the huge impact we have on the world. Our flirtations in Eurasia with Ukraine has caused a huge problem, and it's almost like collateral damage from inadvertent conduct. It's almost collateral damage from the bravado that we use for our domestic conversations with one another. It's almost collateral damage from the tomfoolery we have when we use American exceptionalism as the basis for everything we talk about and do within America and maybe abroad. And you know, we are in the process of stirring the pot in some very difficult negative ways, and we need to have leadership that can recognize that. And I'm afraid that our current political environment generally just doesn't show me that there's people there to do it.
So you just, you know, hit on where I was going. Is any of that possible with the divide that gets bigger and bigger every day between the two parties? I mean, at a time when we do need to have an agreement with both sides that this change needs to occur. It can't be one side saying we're the ones with the answer to this. Well, the other side doesn't know. Look at what they've done, and pointing the fingers.
Well, look at this. The whole show, I think, has been a discussion of problems that relate to the lack of courageous political leadership. Is this this sacredness of guns anything but the result of political weakness and leadership weakness? Because everybody privately would agree that it's crazy that we have 400 million guns in the hands of Americans, of civilians, that we have 20 million assault rifles, 50,000 machine guns out there in the hands of civilians. Everyone would agree that that is not an outcome that should exist, but there aren't any political leaders willing to stick their head up above the foxhole and talk like that. Okay, and the same is true with respect to our foreign policy or our defense budget. And so, the problems we have in America today, in many respects, are the result of no political leadership. People in politics
on either side.
On either side, people in politics who only stick their finger up and measure the wind. And that's what they do.
Who do we have on the line, Sam?
Dave is calling from Milwaukee.
Hey, Dave, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what, my friend?
I'm doing great. Good morning. I just wanted to call in to say that one cannot have a clear perspective of what's going on in Ukraine with Russia and America's involvement in all of that without reading two resources. One is Gangsters of Capitalism by Jonathan Katz. It's about the story of Smedley Butler's life.
Mm-hmm.
Who he entered the Marines. He lied about his age. He became a Marine at age 16 in the late 1800s. And he was involved in Cuba, Nicaragua, China, Philippines, Panama, Haiti, to name a few, in overthrowing those governments and raiding those countries and installing friendly American leaders in those countries. The other resource one should know about, and I'm sure we've all heard about this, but I really didn't pay much attention to it until, this invasion. And that is the Project for a New American Century. And to sum that up, what that is, that was a project by high-level neocons, including Dick Cheney and Wolfowitz and those types, proposing the world would be better if America totally dominated the world, and that our foreign policy policy should be moving in that direction.
That's Pax Americana, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but this book, this Gangsters of Capitalism, was amazing because the author, Jonathan Katz, got access. Okay, Butler was a prolific letter writer. He was a Quaker, very religious. He joined the Marines to make America safe for democracy. And three-quarters of the way into his career, murdering and killing his way through the world, he had a change of heart, and he called himself a gangster of capitalism, hence the title of the book. And he resented a lot of the assignments that he was given. But what's amazing is he was a prolific letter writer, and the author got access to the letters from the family, from the Butler family. And so you get insight into his evolution from being, this really patriotic, making the world safe for democracy with, America dominating everything, to, his change and what caused him to change position. He also, of note, is he was recruited. He was recruited to do a coup on FDR. It's called the business plot. This is not a conspiracy theory. There were congressional investigations. It's public record. It's just been lost in history.
So thank you very much for the call. I really appreciate it. Sandy, we've got to face some hard truths about our country.
Yeah.
There are many Americans who don't want to face that. Well, and for the life of me, I don't, and every day I come in here, I try to get people to look at the truth about what's happening, and they don't want to, right? I mean, it's like kids, I don't like oatmeal, I'm not eating it.
It's this American exceptionalism and our domestic sort of arrogance, the notion that we can't be imperfect and still be exceptional. We can't meet all of the standards we've set for America if we have imperfections, and so we ignore them. It's like narcissism. It's like malignant narcissism on an international basis.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.